Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller, and this is NPR News, now in depth on health care that Congress collaborates on. An impossible dream? Maybe not. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is still trying to find enough votes to pass the repeal bill that he's been promising for 6 years. But as he makes changes to win more GOP senators, it sounds like the bill is becoming more centrist. We'll talk about that. What if the health care legislation coming out of Washington could be truly bipartisan? Republicans listen to Democrats and vice versa. Would that serve Americans better? And as we talk about what a collaborative bill would really mean, I want to hear from you. Is it better when the party in power, the Republicans at the moment, create legislation like this on their own? After all, they'd say that Americans put them in power for a reason, and Democrats passed Obamacare without Republicans. Or is this just the kind of legislation that we now know should be created with input from all parties? So better when the party in power does it like they said they were going to do it and American voters gave them control of Congress and the White House? Or is this the kind of legislation that we know should be created with input from all parties? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Russell Berman is with us. He's a senior associate editor for The Atlantic, and he's with us from New York City. And Russell, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here.
Good to be with you.
We are expecting Paige Winfield Cunningham from The Post to be with us, but she might be out on a story, and we're trying to get in touch with her. So you and me, Russell, for a while. Is this whole conversation that we're about to have based on kind of a pipe dream? I mean, it's just never going to happen. Or are the political calculations looking like Republicans are going to have some Democratic votes? And for that, they have to bring them in on the process.
Well, if we were talking a couple of months ago, I would say that, yes, it would be a pipe dream to think about a bipartisan health care bill after what happened in the election. But, you know, with each passing day, that is appearing more likely. The comments that you mentioned from Majority Leader Mitch McConnell last week were significant, acknowledging that the next, you know, step, if Republicans can't pass this bill on their own with 50 Republican votes and no Democratic votes, the next step would be to work with Democrats on at least a temporary fix for the insurance exchanges, as opposed to what, you know, President Trump and even some Republicans have said. They've said that if the bill failed, then they would just let Obamacare collapse on its own and wait for Democrats essentially to come begging when they would have a lot less leverage. But, you know, it looks like there are more Republicans, not only McConnell, but, you know, Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, these senators who have been holdouts on the Republican bill. They want to engage in bipartisan negotiations with Democrats, and that would require 60 votes. So, you know, it's something that at the end of this week, that could look a lot more likely at the end of, you know, the next couple of weeks. But actually passing something, as opposed to just working on a bipartisan solution, that's a much bigger hurdle. And as we talk here today, I can't really predict that they're actually going to pass something on a bipartisan basis through both the Senate and the much more conservative House.
Russell, I was reading something that you wrote recently for The Atlantic that is kind of in this line, and you said the likeliest path to a compromise is if conservatives consent to additional spending moderates are demanding for Medicaid and tax credits in exchange for changes that allow insurers leeway around Obamacare's insurance regulations. I mean, I want to take that apart in a minute, but that almost sounds like a blueprint for the way you could bring some Democratic votes into this bill. I mean, that kind of shows that it could work.
Possibly, but I think that's the solution that they're still working on a Republican-only bill, because what Democrats would say about the changes to the regulations, what Ted Cruz is proposing, essentially to allow insurers to sell stripped-down insurance plans alongside insurance plans that would cover all of the things that they are required to cover now under Obamacare, including, sort of equality for people with pre-existing conditions. Democrats, that's a non-starter for most Democrats, because they say that would raise the cost of coverage for people with pre-existing conditions and make it unaffordable. So the first part of what you said, what they might do to engage moderate Republicans, putting more money into the subsidies, reducing the cuts to, or restoring some of the cuts to Medicaid, that's something that might have some bipartisan support. But what conservatives are calling for now, is not going to lead to a bipartisan solution with Democrats.
But I guess what I was asking is that without the details the way they are today, is that an overall outline where you could get partway on the insurance regulations that the Democrats might accept it? And we know what many Republican governors and members of Congress are saying about what they want to do with Medicaid. I mean, is there the foundation for something that might work there?
I think the foundation is more along the lines of the putting more money in for the subsidies, stabilizing the insurance markets with these what are called cost-sharing reduction payments that the Trump administration has only sort of made to insurers on a month-to-month basis. That's something that the Democrats have prioritized in this debate. I think they would be willing to negotiate on some of the regulations on a much more limited basis than Republicans are talking about now. One of the things that that did come up, though, that Democrats might consider in terms of changing Obamacare might be the repeal of the employer insurance mandate, the requirement that most businesses provide insurance for their employees. That's one of the two pillars that Republicans have been going after for years, that and, of course, the individual mandate requiring people to purchase insurance. Representative John Yarmuth of Kentucky, who's now a leading Democrat on policy matters, he's the top Democrat on the House Budget Committee, he told me he would actually support repealing that employer mandate, which is a pretty big step for a leading Democrat to take. And so that I could see being sort of a concession that Democrats might be willing to make,
right,
if somebody like John Yarmuth is saying it.
So,
and then in exchange, Republicans would obviously have to agree to put more money in, essentially, into the individual market and the subsidies.
Let me bring Paige Cunningham in here. She writes about healthcare policy for The Washington Post. Hi, Paige. Thanks for being with us. Hi.
Hi, great to be on.
You just heard Russell kind of laying out this potential give and take. As you report, are those possibilities where there could actually be collaboration?
Well, the individual and employer mandates are the most unpopular parts of the ACA.
Okay.
And so I could see a scenario where you would have some moderate Democrats kind of come on board, both in the House and the Senate, on repealing those. But then, of course, you run into this problem of keeping the insurance regulations and then how do you convince, these healthier people to buy these plans that are a little bit more expensive? So, I'm still kind of in the camp of people that think the Senate may actually find a way to pass this bill in the next 3 weeks. And, it's looking really, really challenging. But let's remember that a lot of these lines in the sand that some of these Republicans are drawing, a lot of that could be just to buy themselves negotiating power. And, at the end of the day, if some of these members like Dean Heller or Shelley Moore Capito or Rob Portman are going to vote for this bill, they have to be able to go back to their state and say, I pushed for this change in the legislation. I got more opioid funding. I got a slower phase out of Medicaid expansion, maybe, or I rolled back some of its cuts, and they have to be able to take that back to their constituents and say, this is like the reason that I voted for the bill. So even if at the end of the day, the legislation, still costs many more people to lose their coverage relative to the Affordable Care Act, these members would have to have political cover to vote for the bill. And so you're seeing a lot of that sort of maneuvering, over the next few weeks, probably.
And that is really important to understand here. But the other thing that I want to do with this show is, what if in the absence, a thought experiment, what if in the absence of the Senate being able to rally those votes that you're talking about, they collaborate. I mean, what could the bill look like if they took the best parts out of what we currently have and then what Republicans want to do? What could the bill actually be? And I started off going, is it a pipe dream? And it might be. But Paige, go ahead.
Well, I do think one of the problems that you have seen the moderate Republicans and Democrats acknowledge, well, all Democrats and then some moderate Republicans, is that when you look at the marketplaces, the subsidies are not sufficient for some of the people at the higher ends of the income
right.
level. When you look at who's actually enrolled in the marketplace plans, it has been overwhelmingly people under 200 to 250% of the federal poverty level, because they can get big enough subsidies to actually make the monthly premiums affordable for them. And so I think one of the thoughts is that, you know, if you are in this situation where you're not going to repeal or replace the ACA, you've got to do something for these marketplaces around the country. And we've got about, you know, 5 or 6 states where things aren't looking so good. You've got to do something to shore those up. So one thing, you know, legislatively you could do is to try to entice more of these healthier people into the marketplaces by offering them better subsidies.
Michael says on Twitter, this is kind of funny, compromise, you want Miami, I want Fairbanks. Will Fargo make either of us happy? Dems and Republicans are likely in the same shoes. And to the phones to George in White Bear Lake. Hey, George, hi.
Hi, I hear nothing about taxes. Even David Brooks said that this plan is a tremendous transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich.
Okay. So what would happen with the tax policy that is within the bill? Russell, that's something that the Republicans are taking a lot of heat on.
Right. You know, Democrats have said this is basically a tax cut in the guise of a health care bill. What's interesting is one thing that the Republicans are considering as they look for those last votes, especially from moderates, is they were going to repeal almost all of the taxes in the Affordable Care Act that Democrats used to pay for the new benefits and programs. But they are considering keeping in place an investment income tax that was part of the Affordable Care Act that doesn't really have anything to do with health care. It doesn't directly affect the health care industry. That would get the Republicans a lot more money if they were to keep that tax in place, not repeal it. They could use that money to boost up the subsidies in the bill or to take away some of the restore some of the cuts to Medicaid. So it might become slightly less of a tax cut as it moves forward, but it's still one way or the other. If it's a Republican-only bill, it's going to be a big tax cut as well.
A call here from Peter in Roseville. Hey, Peter, how are you thinking about this?
Yeah, I think we're talking about an insurance program and not health care, and I wish we'd change the language about that. I prefer either going with single payer or more of the libertarian plan and just cut these horrible rent-seeking in-between companies out of there, like United Healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe the extent to which the ACA and Trump Care was much worse. I'm grouping them in the same bucket. They're like farm subsidies. They're designed for the person. In reality, it's a subsidy that just goes upstream to the insurance company on one side and the big agribusinesses on the other. I think it's appalling.
And you think, Peter, that single payer is the solution to what you've just described?
Well, I like single payer, but some of the libertarian things that actually take insurance completely out of the equation would be better than this basically subsidy for insurance companies. The ACA and Trump Care both were. That's got to end.
Paige, do you hear objections like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably one of the strongest arguments against the way the ACA works is that it did take this middle ground, which is the federal government heavily subsidizing these private marketplace plans that people can buy. And there's pretty broad acknowledgement that it is sort of the least efficient way for government to pay for health insurance for people. Medicaid is actually much, much cheaper because in the marketplaces, the subsidies are basically how much the government has to pay in subsidies is sort of out of its hands in a sense. You know, people are only can be expected to pay a certain percentage of their income based on this benchmark silver plan. And so basically, as premiums go up, the government's going to have to kick in more and more for the subsidies. And there is less less incentive for insurers to bring those premiums down, lowering overall costs. And then you still have so you have sort of this ongoing problem of people are still unable to afford the cost of health insurance on their own. And so I think that is a pretty strong argument for single payer. And when you even see people on the more conservative end of the spectrum at least acknowledge that, you know, in a way it would be more efficient and less costly for the government just to do a single-payer system.
Russell, a couple questions here about Medicaid. Isn't it likely that in whatever the Senate comes up with, if they're going to try to pass it, they are going to have to put more money on the Medicaid spending? I mean, when you see senators like John McCain and Jerry Moran of Kansas who are talking about objecting to the Medicaid cuts. I mean, they're thinking about elderly constituents who are in nursing homes, about the possibility that Medicaid wouldn't cover those. I mean, that's where it gets real, doesn't it? Isn't McConnell going to have to make some kinds of changes to this?
Yes, and I think, but it's important to compare to compare what the changes would be. Right now, the bill takes $700 to $800 billion out of Medicaid in terms of what it would be spending if the bill didn't pass over the next decade, and hundreds of billions of dollars more in the decade after. Mm-hmm. So they could restore some of that, a few hundred billion dollars even, and it would still take, it would still be a significant cut to Medicaid spending.
I see.
And so I think one of the things that it looked like McConnell did in initially unveiling the draft bill a couple of weeks ago was to really side with the conservatives on Medicaid in terms of what they were looking for. They were looking to change the growth rate in the second decade to really bring down the cost to the federal government. They were looking at a shorter phase out of the Medicaid expansion. So starting in 2020, a lot of Republicans wanted there to be a 7-year phase out for the expansion, and what McConnell did was only 4 years. And so what that did is they started the bill to the right so that they have some room to move it back to the center.
Okay.
to give these senators, just like Paige was mentioning, to give these senators an opportunity to say, well, I succeeded in making the bill better for my state, and therefore I'm going to vote for it. So I think there is some room in Medicaid to do that, and it looks like conservatives, if they can get what they want on the insurance regulation side, it looks like they might go for that.
This is a conversation, if you've just gotten in on it, with Russell Berman from The Atlantic and Paige Winfield Cunningham from The Washington Post, and I asked them if they would conduct a thought experiment with us. I know this is somewhat unlikely to happen, but what if we took some of the working parts of Obamacare and then brought in Republicans to in a collaborative mix of ideas, brought in Republican and Democratic ideas about what's working and what isn't working, and that's the path to a new bill on healthcare? What would it look like? Again, hearing Paige loud and clear that she thinks the Senate bill isn't over, and Russell saying that this is a high bar to hit. But what would we end up with? And what would some of the specific tenets of Obamacare, how would it change? How about what Senate Republicans and House Republicans would contribute to that process? So that's what we're doing this morning. And I'm asking you if it's better when the party in power, which is the Republicans at the moment, create legislation like this on their own. Is this the kind of legislation that we now know should be created with input from all parties? And what kinds of questions do you have about the specifics of health care legislation on that? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at @CarrieNPR. John says, have you heard of No Labels? Their caucus, the Problem Solvers Caucus, may vote as a block. 20 Dems, R's, Senator Collins is a member. Paige, I know about some of these moderates that don't like what they see out of the Senate bill, but I wasn't aware that this is a whole block of people that could be influential.
Collins is one of the key people, as you mentioned, Murkowski, Dean Heller. It's especially important to watch Dean Heller and Jess Flake, because those are the only two Senate Republicans with really vulnerable next year.
Okay.
And so I think that's why you've seen Heller especially come out in recent weeks saying he doesn't like the cuts to Medicaid and he would want a slower phase out of Medicaid expansion. You know, when people ask me who are the two Republicans that McConnell will, assuming McConnell gets together 50 members to pass this, who are going to be the two members that he loses, essentially?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's still pretty likely that Susan Collins would be the one on the moderate side. You know, she had some pretty strong statements over the recess. Like she had marched in a July 4th
right.
parade, and she had talked to one of my colleagues about how she was really hearing a lot of praise from her constituents for coming out against the Senate bill. The Senate bill, as it stands, also contains Planned Parenthood defunding, which is a whole other aspect to this, and that's something that Collins would be unlikely to vote for. And then the person on the conservative side, I think, is still probably Rand Paul as the most likely conservative to end up opposing this.
So are you saying you think Dean Heller would come around?
I mean, I'm loath to make predictions because it is so hard to tell at this point, and he has
right.
made some very strong statements against the bill. I think I think he's more likely to come around at this point than Susan Collins is, but I could very well be proven wrong. You know, Dean Heller has some very strong pressure from, you know, the governor in his state,
right, Nevada.
Who was one of the Republican governors to expand Medicaid, and so he's just getting a lot of pushback there. But I think I would still have to put my money at this point on Collins as being the person that McConnell just kind of, you know, takes for a loss.
Can I ask you guys about the language on pre-existing conditions if there was really collaboration on this? Because it looks like the Senate bill appears to give insurance companies the right, Russell, to make insuring someone with a pre-existing condition very expensive. Does it give insurance companies more leeway to do that? And how might you reach language that would satisfy everybody on that if you can?
Well, I think directly, no, they didn't take the path that the House bill did, and they tried to sort of carve out the pre-existing conditions and not allow essentially states or insurance companies or states to opt out of those requirements. But that is essentially the major demand from conservatives at this point, is some language that would allow insurance companies or states to have flexibility on pre-existing conditions. So I think Paige might be able to correct me, but I think the Senate bill right now does not affect people with pre-existing conditions, at least directly.
Is that right, Paige?
Yeah, no, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has really wanted to retain those protections all along. I think he really recognizes that that's one of the most popular parts of the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, the House members really got a lot of pushback for allowing those waivers to opt out of those protections. But conservatives have really been rallying around this because, you know, Ted Cruz's whole line through this whole thing is he says, whatever else we do, we absolutely have to lower insurance premiums. That is the thing. That is the priority in his mind. And to a large extent, Mike Lee tends to kind of copy what Ted Cruz does. And so he's going along with it, and now all of these other conservatives. So basically, under the Cruz Amendment, it would allow insurers to opt out of virtually all of the ACA regulations, including the protections for people with pre-existing conditions, as long as they offer just one marketplace plan that is compliant. I actually wrote about this morning in the Health 202 newsletter. Experts are saying it would, if this amendment was adopted to the Senate bill, and by no means is it certain that McConnell mm-hmm. will allow this in,
mm-hmm.
but it would create two markets within the individual market. All of the healthy people would want to buy the plans that are opting out of the ACA recs. They don't need as much health care.
Right.
You know, they could buy a leaner, cheaper plan, lower monthly premiums. The sicker people would flock to these ACA-compliant plans because they need the cushier benefits. And now their premiums are skyrocketing because
right.
all of the sickest people are in one risk pool. So that's sort of the concern that McConnell and I think the moderates would have with this approach if it were to be adopted.
Paige, just a quick question, because you mentioned the risk pool, and we've talked about this a lot on this show. Is it fair to say that the ACA risk pool was never balanced the way that they that they hoped it would, or so far it has not been balanced the way they imagined it would be? Because you couldn't get enough of those young Invincibles in, or did that get fixed?
Right. Well, one of the problems was that, you know, the individual mandate didn't end up being as strong of an incentive for people to buy coverage.
They were, like, willing to pay the fines, right?
Right, exactly. And even now the fines are, I believe, around, I want to say $700 or something a year, which is actually a lot cheaper than a lot of premiums. And what's sort of interesting is that the House and Senate bills also contain incentives for healthy people to buy coverage, because there is a sort of a broad understanding that you have to do that. But the House and Senate bill would take much would actually be even less effective than the individual mandate potentially. In the House bill, you could be charged like 30% higher premium if you had lacked continuous coverage.
Right.
And in the Senate bill, you would have to wait 6 months to get coverage. And so, anyhow, the thought is that we're not at all certain that under those incentives would be strong enough to actually improve the risk pools enough. The arguments from conservatives is that, you know, the healthier people are going to want to buy in because the premiums are going to be lower and it's going to be more affordable for everybody.
Okay. Call here from Juan in El Paso, Texas. Hey, Juan, thank you for waiting. What are you thinking
about?
Good
morning.
Hi.
Good morning. Very, very important program. And I thank you and your guests. I wanted to say that lost in all of the conversation recently is the fact that when Obamacare was being promulgated, there was a year worth of hearings, of congressional hearings. Republicans participated, Democrats participated. There was a lot of screaming and yelling before the Republicans backed out. Hmm. The main reason being, of course, they didn't want to hand President Obama a victory of any kind. Now, they could have at any time come forward and tried to work with the Democrats to make it better, and they were begged to do that. So when I hear these guys saying, well, the Democrats did it, so we can do it, that is a false equivalency that is just disgusting. It's ridiculous.
Okay.
And when what they're doing is hurting the American people by not doing anything. This bill, the way the Senate has it now, is appalling. I think it's horrible. It's, as President Orangeface said, it's mean. And it does nothing to move the ball forward.
So, Juan, an interesting point at the beginning of this. By the way, I tweeted out a graphic, I think it was in the Times this morning, about who was more secretive in the run-up to the making of the health care bills. And it appears that it was the Republicans. Russell, to what Juan is saying, though, is it true that Democrats were as open and inviting to Republicans as Juan describes they were?
For a long time, yes. In the course of 2009, they spent months on the Senate side in particular trying to recruit a trio of Republican senators, and there were good faith bipartisan negotiations. But then when those senators pulled off and Democrats sort of lost faith in them, that included Chuck Grassley, Olympia Snow at the time, then Democrats did work on a partisan basis. And I think the criticism from Republicans really escalated in the final days and weeks before they passed the bill in March of 2010, when sort of the changes and the negotiations about getting those final votes all took place behind closed doors. But in the run-up to that, in the original bill in 2009, they did have full hearings. There was even that summit that President Obama convened.
Right, I was just going to ask you about
C-SPAN.
That. Yeah.
And that was actually, I think, in the beginning of 2010 as well. So they had a ton of public debate. But the Republican criticism there that I guess is most valid is that at the very end, when they were cutting these deals, the Cornhusker kickback, which didn't actually pass into law, but that was the one with Ben Nelson of Nebraska, that's what fed the Republican criticism that this was a bill that was negotiated behind closed doors and without public input. And certainly those last changes were, but the whole the structure of the bill, the underlying legislation, was a much more open process 8 years ago.
A call here from Amelia in St. Paul. Hey, Amelia. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I just wanted to ask what people thought about the entire process going into the Affordable Care Act. I read Bill Bryson's book, America's Bitter Pill, a couple of years ago, and I found it invigorating, to say the least. I am a nurse at the VA Medical Center in Minneapolis, and I really appreciate my work and kind of see where costs could be lowered and everything and how we can improve our healthcare system. So at this point, my question is, knowing that when Barack and the entire team went into doing the Affordable Care Act, they wanted the public option. And that was something that didn't end up getting passed because they thought that the bill itself wouldn't get passed, and they let that fall by the wayside.
Right.
So I'm wondering about people's perspective on just the loss of the public option.
Okay. Yeah. Good question, Amelia. Thanks so much for the call. Paige, I think Amelia's got that right, doesn't she, about what happened with public option? It was kind of set aside.
Right. There were quite members that were really pushing for it. Bernie prominent at the But this whole process, the past he had it first started out on a bipartisan basis. And so they were looking for a pathway where they could get Republicans on board. And that was just a non-starter in the Republican Party. And so that was eventually cut. You've actually seen, though, a couple of some of the more liberal senators talk increasingly about the possibility of a public option. It was interesting last year, actually, you know, before, well, during Obama's in office, there was really a push for this. Obama actually wrote a whole piece on it in a medical journal advocating for this approach.
Wow.
A couple of other senators had talked about it. And I think there was a sense, you know, last year that, you know, assuming the election had turned out differently, that you might have a president and a Congress that might be willing to move in that direction. And that was really seen as, you know, kind of a more liberal solution to the problems in the marketplaces. The argument is that if you have a public option plan, it's providing competition to lower the price of the plans and the marketplaces overall. And so there was really some momentum building in this direction last year. But then, of course, the election very differently than most people thought. And now we're having a very different conversation.
And we are. Actually, I think it's time for another show on the public option. I think that'll make a lot of listeners here happy who say, why don't you ever talk about that? So, Paige, thank you. Really good to have the insight. I know you're a busy woman, so thanks so much for the time.
Of course.
And Russell, thanks to you, and same to you. I know you're busy writing about this, so we really appreciate the benefit of your experience and your reporting. Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Russell Berman from The Atlantic and Paige Winfield Cunningham from The Washington Post. And yeah, I think it would be time for a conversation about the public option, given some of what Paige and Russell have said about the interest in that. On Capitol Hill, you can find all of our conversations about healthcare, and there are many of them on my podcast. How to look for it? Just search NPR News with Carrie Miller wherever you get your podcasts.